It's my joy to welcome you to the show that aims to support and encourage Christians in leadership. I wonder how well you know the churches in your town or neighbourhood. It can be a bewildering job to make sense of what they're about. Denominational labels may help, but there are a range of styles and even beliefs around the central core of following Jesus. What of the so-called new churches, once known as house churches, that have sprung up since the 1960s and are really not new anymore? Sometimes the title of the church gives it away with words like Christian fellowship or community church, but they may meet in a school and have no actual building. What are they about and what are they offering that is any different from what's been around for centuries? Well, today I'm delighted to be joined by a guest who has engaged in a ton of research on the history of the development of new church streams as part of a project designed to help the Catholic Church better understand what God has been doing through the charismatic movement. His name is Dr. Richard Roberts, and his research is contained in his latest book, Rediscovering Churches Networks: The Ongoing Story of the Non-Denominational Charismatic Churches. So I'm looking forward to him helping us gain perspective on the different ways in which churches are organized and how the Bible may endorse or indeed challenge our perspective. So welcome, Richard. Lovely to have you on the Leadership Show.
Thank you.
Richard, I found the book fascinating. I'm familiar a little bit with the development of the charismatic movements as expressed in both the UK and indeed the United States. And if I may so, I thought you did a brilliant job summarizing some pretty broad topics very fairly. But I'd like us to, in this show, to zero down on how we might assess the different approaches to church leadership from a biblical perspective. But first, I guess I need to ask, why did you focus so much on the new church streams for the Catholic Church? Protestants are probably a bit puzzled by the project itself.
Yes, thank you. Well, I actually got into it by accident as a friend of mine asked him to ask me if I would join in some official conversations that were taking place between the Catholic Church and the new churches. But I felt it was an important thing to do because there are actually 1.4 billion Catholics in the world. They're the biggest chunk of the Christian churches. Obviously, many of those 1.4 million Catholics are not practicing, but many of them are. And one in 10, or maybe one in 12 of the Catholic Church are charismatic. So that's about 130 million charismatic Catholics in the world. And in fact, there's been quite a lot of contact in the UK between the new churches and the charismatic Catholics. But the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church has been a lot less clear on who we are and our identity and what we believe. And so I joined a team that met with the Vatican for 6 years. And out of those series of dialogues, we produced a paper about 20 pages long that described the new churches. And they published it on the Vatican website. I think it may even be the only paper on the Vatican website that's not either wholly or partly authored by a Catholic.
Oh,
So that's my one claim to fame.
well. Now, I mean, I imagine the Catholic Church is a bit bemused by the way the Protestant Church, obviously we're going back to the 1500s, how that splintered so much over successive centuries.
Yes.
And obviously the new church streams are also, I mean, they're not a homogenous thing either. Can you do the impossible and in a few minutes for people perhaps ignorant of new church streams, just give us a brief thumbnail of how the new church develop.
Well, I'll stick to the British New Church streams.
Sure.
In the book, I look at the Global South. I look at North America as well as the UK and Europe. But certainly in the UK, it may surprise listeners to know that we're actually looking back to the late 1950s. So there were two figures who lived in Devon called Arthur Wallace and David Lilley, who were based around the Exeter area. And they held a series of very small conferences. And these conferences were small but significant. And some of the people who became key players in the new churches like Roger Forster with Ichthus and Bryn Jones with Covenant Ministries. They attended those conferences. And basically what they were looking at was the nature of the church. As part of that, they were looking at the leadership of the church. They were looking at the nature of apostolic ministry. And out of those conferences came something that's been given the title, not by those of us within the new churches, but outside, as Restorationism, which basically is about the fact that in some respects the New Testament church looked a bit different than some of what we see today. So not in terms of slavish imitation, but in terms of emphasis and ethos. So there was an attempt to recapture something of the vitality of the early church. And so people began to form links with each other relationally and develop networks of churches that turned into what we see today. And in fact, if you look at the numbers involved today, just in those more official networks rather than people who form new churches but aren't linked, the numbers are quite large. In fact, there are more new churches now than Elim and Assemblies of God combined in the UK. So we're looking at quite a large number of churches. But in essence, that's how it formed. The second thread really was the charismatic movement, and some people were forced out of their churches because they spoke in tongues. But the new churches formed with a big emphasis on Christian community. How do we do church beyond Sunday? And also allowed for more entrepreneurial sort of apostolic ministry, more room for experimentation. I guess in outline, that's how the new church is formed and developed.
And your book, Richard, does chart some of the divisions, sometimes major, sometimes minor, between the different streams. Andrew Walker, in his book Restoring the Kingdom, talks about so-called R1 and R2, the more strict shepherding movement and the looser movement of R2. Having studied things at length, what do you make of how God was at work in all these and all the various streams?
Well, I can only speculate on this. I don't have a hotline.
No, sure.
God,
I appreciate it. I was just interested in your perspective.
I became a Christian in the early 1970s. I came from an unchurched background, and many churches then were stuck in rather overly traditional forms. So, you know, it's been characterized by the fact that they often met in 17th century buildings, sang 18th century hymns, and wore 19th century clothes. The first church service I went to, I didn't know anything about churches. I went, came along in my jeans, and all the other young people were in smart clothes, and some of the guys were in suits. And so I went along the next day to the youth club wearing a suit, and of course they were all in jeans. So there was this very cultural barrier, really. And I think that one of the things God has done through the new churches is he's made church a bit more contextual to culture. So very often the songs will reflect the sort of nature of the songs that people are singing around them. So, you know, it was soft rock when I was young, and so many soft rock worship songs were introduced through people like John Wimber. So that was one thing. I think also leadership models were more suited to an older hierarchical age where most people in the community had some church affiliation. And I think people were rethinking, what does leadership look like in today's culture? And the third thing is that I think God may have been using the new churches as sort of experiments. At the time I was, or in the 80s and 90s, I was leading a small church in a village. We had breakfast services before they were a thing. We gave every other Sunday over to the kids. I mean, my son at the age of 10 led a church meeting, and this was in the days before messy church. We weren't modeling it on anybody else, but nobody was looking at us, so we were completely free to experiment. And I think that this has helped to pave the way for, others to look in other churches and think, well, that's quite a good thing to do. Maybe we can adopt that. I'm not saying that all the sort of fresh expressions were modeled on things that we did, but certainly I think we looked at them and tried them out long before they were a thing. So I think those three things really, contextualize the church to our culture, re-examine leadership models, and to experiment with different forms of church that might be good for mission.
Well, thanks, Richard. And perhaps we can focus a little bit, because obviously it's a leadership show, on this understanding of the restoration of the fivefold ministry of Ephesians 4. To remind listeners, in that passage, the risen Christ has given apostles, prophets, evangelists, and pastors and teachers to equip the church for works of service. Now, some of the new churches, of course, claim this restoration was a key thing. As we look back now, some of those who said that they, quotes, were apostles, or believed they were apostles, have kind of passed away. There hasn't necessarily been much apostolic succession in some streams. There's no apostolic spheres. I just wonder how key you felt that this restoration element of the whole new church movement was, and what we should make of it in terms of their claims for its importance.
Just f firstly, just to say that a common new church view would be that in the New Testament we see the word apostle used in three different ways. The first is the unique 12 apostles who were witnesses to Jesus' life, had a major view in writing scripture. And to say somebody is an apostle today, it doesn't mean that they replicate that aspect of the ministry of the 12. Then there is the use of the word apostle, as in Ephesians 4. It's the risen Christ giving these ministries to people. So the risen Christ gives apostleship to certain people. I mean, I believe he always has. We just haven't recognized it. St. Patrick converted nearly a third of Ireland, sent there by God in a vision. If he wasn't an apostle, I don't know who was. So there's the apostle used in that sense. And then the third way it's used is just as messenger. There are people who they call the apostles of the churches, or the messengers of the churches, people the churches sent out to do things. So that using that sense of apostles in terms of Ephesians 4, apostles can only be appointed by the risen Christ. We can't appoint them. In that sense, there's no apostolic succession, because apostles are not commissioned by you and me. They're commissioned by Jesus himself. So there's been this sort of restoration, if you like, of the recognition of apostolic and prophetic ministry, because it's always been there. But the idea that these are ministries for today has produced more heat than light. Now, some people, I think, have felt that all these ministries in the church have to do with governance. They have to do with who's in control. And I feel that that's been a huge mistake, and has led to a lot of unhelpful and at times abusive situations. So for others like myself, I think what we want to recognize is that there are people who God has called to have a wider remit than a local church. So there may be people who help churches, other churches, maintain their relational purity and their doctrinal purity. They may be people who plant new churches. They may help existing churches fulfill their calling. And they differ from, you know, churches have regional superintendents or they have rural deans in a geographic area who are sort of responsible for the churches in their geographic area. But these ministries function relationally. So for me, the term apostle just means that somebody has been given a commission by Jesus and then sort of fulfills that, usually wider than a local church. It's not a big deal. And I tend to refer to apostolic ministry or pastoral ministry. I don't like titles.
Oh, sure.
So, but I like ministry descriptors, I think.
No, that's enormously helpful. I think that the point that you made, that the New Testament itself talks about both the 12, but also uses the word apostle of others.
Yes.
And it actually helps us to grasp that it's not heresy today to be talking about apostolic
No.
ministry, because that's what the New Testament evolved into and had suggested. That's great. Thank you. Now, Richard, if we are to measure the effectiveness of churches in terms of people coming to faith and growing in Christ, obviously the new church movement believed that they were the way of God in terms of how they were doing things. How does their values help them to be successful? And maybe we'll look also at perhaps how their approach has not worked.
So I think just to start by saying that when we think we're in the way of God, it's a very dangerous place to be. So I think it's much better just to feel desperate and that you're doing the best you can.
Sure.
But I think that I've already touched upon this willingness to experiment. And I think that's important because for the new churches, generally mission is all important. I would say, if I could differentiate between the two, mission is more important than church growth, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Because the church growth movement was often focused on attracting people to my church rather than
Sure.
mission. But I think the question is, how do we make the barrier to entry to church low in terms of culture, but keep high expectations of discipleship? So we're not putting people off because they're coming into something that's alien, but we're not saying anything goes. We're saying we are a group of people who are seeking to be, in our own way, as much as we can, serious followers of Jesus. I think for us, mission has shaped church. I mean, people have put this in more theological terms, that missiology shapes ecclesiology. Actually, taking it further back, that Christology shapes missiology, shapes ecclesiology. What do we see in the life of Jesus that has an impact on the way that we conduct mission, that has an impact on the way that we do church? So I think what we've tried to do is to combine the ancient, the New Testament roots, not slavishly imitating, but what's the ethos of the church in the New Testament. Combine that with the modern, the cultural context. Now, I think one of the other things that have helped new church streams be successful is that often leaders are not, we don't say somebody's good for leadership, send them to theological college. They then spend 3 or 4 years there. We then send them somewhere else. They're often raised up locally from within the congregation. So they know the church. They have the trust of the people in the church. And they know their town or region. And that's tremendously helpful for mission.
Thanks, Richard. And are there any ways in which you think actually that there was great ambition, but actually some of the values did not lead to what the new churches might have hoped for?
Yes, I think that's a good question, a great question. I'll just stick to three things. The first is that, unlike denominations, we've often not had clear mechanisms for accountability. I think that's particularly evident in some high-profile leadership disasters in the US. I think in the new churches, we can often value gift more than character. And people can get away with poor practice or even at times abuse without being called to account. I'm not saying that's a universal thing, but I think that's one of the issues we need to think about. The second thing is that some of us who lead in new churches can lack theological depth. So I think the latest book or conference talk can be the main source of inspiration for a talk or a sermon. And I think that the third thing is that people in new churches, probably more than in other streams, can easily chase novelty. We're looking for the next big thing rather than realizing that leadership is really like farming. It's just doing the same thing over and over again, waiting for the seasons. We're looking for the quick fix. And, you know, we get all these dubious prophecies that circulate. We get books that promote weird but popular ideas. I won't enumerate them, but I think I list about seven in the book.
You do indeed, yes.
And I think what that points to is the need for biblical literacy. I think we need greater depth of understanding. I don't necessarily mean academic theological study, which, you know, I've enjoyed doing, but it's not for everybody. But we need to really understand and know what the Bible's getting at in these things. So these things are true of some new churches, but I hope we're not all like that.
Sure. Richard, there are denominations such as Anglican churches, Baptist churches, and you mentioned the charismatic Catholic churches. They're open to the filling in the Spirit. They see the Spirit's gifting in the ways described in the New Testament, not unlike, obviously, new church streams. Could we conclude that God has used the influence of new church streams to bless all churches? Or would you say, actually, these are independent moves?
Yeah, I think when God moves, he does the same thing in lots of different places. And, you know, he often starts in small and insignificant places with small and insignificant people like myself, you know, you know, why does he choose to do things? You know, he doesn't choose to do it among the wise and the clever and the great, which is disappointing if you've put a lot of money into theological education. But I think I'll just touch on one area. New churches associate with each other through networks. So that my book is titled Rediscovering Church as Networks. And I think that's one of the key characteristics of the new churches. And as churches, we have explored the benefits of networks and we've made many mistakes. And networks have always been present in denomination, but I think that they're now much more common. And I think some of that has been due to contact with those of us in the new churches. So, for example, we've got the New Wine Network, predominantly Anglican, but including others. And of course, New Wine came about because charismatic Anglicans were a bit anxious that people would defect to Vineyard, because Vineyard was starting in the UK. And John Wimber didn't want that to happen. And so the New Wine Network formed based on the model of Vineyard. Now, the clue's in the name, New Wine and Vineyard. Holy Trinity Brompton has created what is effectively its own network. And like the new churches, there's been a big emphasis on church planting. And the Catholic Charismatic Renewal has its own network structures, both globally and locally.
Richard, when in my introduction, I talked about the way in which some new church streams are a little bit lacking in visibility for the denomination, sometimes a town or city may be ignorant of what they're doing. Do you get the sense that today new churches are broadly accepted by some of the main churches? Ministers fraternals include leaders from new church streams, or do you sense there's a lingering tension between the two?
I think my impression is that it depends where you live. So in the 1980s, I planted a church in a village near a large town. It was what they call an accidental church plant. I didn't mean to plant it. We just ended up with a lot of people
okay.
in our living room and thought, what will we do with them? Now, I joined in the church leaders' meetings in our local town. And I was very surprised at the acceptance that I received from Anglicans, Baptists, Methodists. They treated me as an equal, which sort of surprised me, really. At the moment, I live in a rural area. And I would say here, there's a much more traditional population, and they're puzzled by the new churches. Some are, I think, openly suspicious of us.
So, Richard, how can listeners get a copy of your book?
Well, I think the easiest way is online. So there's Amazon, Waterstones.
Well, it is a great read. So I do commend the book. So thank you so much for all that you shared, for giving us so much light and warmth towards all that God's been doing in the last since the 1950s. So bless you. It was lovely to chat with Richard Roberts. His latest book is Rediscovering Church as Networks, The Ongoing Story of the Non-Denominational Charismatic Churches. And he's also the author of a book entitled Saint Patrick, Resilience and Adaptability in Church Leadership. So obviously this is a leadership show, and that's particularly on church leadership. Again, his books are available via Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Blackwell's, etc. So great to chat with him. And hopefully, if you're ignorant of the new church streams, then you're a little bit more on board with who they are and what they're about. And if you're part of one, well, maybe you've understood a little bit more of what God has been doing in order to bring the church that you're part of into fellowship, often in networks with others under a particular oversight. As always, you can find Leadership Show archive material by going to Premier.plus, the app or the website, or you can go to Apple, Podbean, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and type in The Leadership Show or its former name, The Leadership File, and you'll find many hundreds of past shows. So this is your host, Andy Peck, thanking you for your company and looking forward once again to you joining us. Bye for now.